We are studying the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday we had the introduction, one point, and we will start the 9th chapter. In the 8th chapter, the last question was, how can one attain to the highest reality? And in that connection he said, journey. The whole life is a journey. Why is it a journey? If it is a journey, how long will it take? Where is the beginning? And where is the end? What is the means? See, we use a word, progress. How do we measure progress unless we are clear where we are and where we want to go? When did we start and through what means we are trying to reach our destination? So, what is the goal of this journey? In simple words, the goal of this journey is to make an end of all journeys. Does it make sense? Constantly roaming. This idea was so beautifully expressed by Swami Vivekananda, at that time Narendranath, through the media of a song. Mano chalo nija niki samsar videshe videshir veshe brahmo keno akarane. Beautiful song. Why do you, O mind, roam about in this foreign land in a foreign dress without any reason? Akarane means what? Without any cause. So why is it? As you see, a person who doesn't have something, he wants to get. That's reasonable. I don't have this, I want to get, obtain that. It's reasonable. But a person who has it, has he any reason to say that I would like to have that? So, Vedanta philosophy says, we have everything. It is not a correct formation. We are everything. What does Brahman lack? What does God lack? Who is undertaking this journey? Only God. That's why the Sufis have realized this, and they said a Sufi undertakes three journeys: from God, in God, to God. In other words, we have come from God, we live in God, and we are moving again towards God. This journey is a false journey, but nevertheless, it is a false journey only when we reach the goal. Until that time, you cannot stop the journey. Not only it is not false, you cannot stop it. So the whole biological evolution, where is it taking us? To the state of perfection. So in our own simple understanding, we call it progress. But the progress by which we measure is not a standard measurement. As the progress is measured, in what terms? Again, in unrealistic terms. What is real progress? We discussed about what is real success. Real success is that which brings us fulfillment. Not things, not what we have, but what we are. If the things that we have can really make us what we would like to be, that's fine. But if the things that we are accumulating only takes us further away from what we would like to be. And in simplest terms, what is it we would like to be? Only three things. Sat, Chit, Nananda. We want to know we are not in danger. Put it in a negative terms. We want to know that we know, and knowledge brings. We know there is not going to be any danger. You see, you don't know your future. You have some certain things. Somebody can take them away, including this body mind, and yet we are clinging to them. But a person who is established in Sat also becomes aware, none can damage me because I am undamageable. And that brings tremendous amount of joy. Now analyze what is happiness, what is joy, a little bit for the sake of understanding our present subject. What happens when you are happy? Do you think you are in danger? Can you think you are in danger and at the same time be happy? Not possible. As though you are assured nothing is going to happen to you at that moment. That's why he said, what is death? It is limitation by time, space and causation. What is happiness? When we forget time, space and causation. That is called happiness. So when we are assured that our Sat, our existence, is in no danger, and when we are fully aware of it, and by that I mean that past, of course, cannot affect us in the form of death, because yesterday cannot kill me, but tomorrow or next moment can. But if I am assured that there is no death, if I can forget the danger, and that means I am forgetting the time, space and causation, they all go together, then I become what is called, what is happiness? My mind becomes free from hesitation. What is happiness? It is not something, the temperature that comes out from outside. It is not the lollipop that comes from outside. It is a state of mind where I simply am not bothered by time, space and causation. This is our present experience of happiness. But those who have progressed in spiritual life, they may be fully aware of time, space and causation, but they won't be affected by it because they know it is false. Time, space and causation are false. They are interpretations of the mind, and our real nature is not of the mind. So what is the journey we are talking about? We have never strayed. Journey also gives us the idea that we are here, but our destination is somewhere else. Now we are here, and it will take a long time to reach our destination. And if we don't do certain things, then we are not going to reach. But if we do certain things, we are going to reach. What am I talking about? Time, space, causation. Really, are we away from our destination? No. Then what is this time, space and causation? What is time? You look at the watch. Where are you? I am in Dallas. I am in Cedar Rapids. Our concept. Where is time and space? When you are dreaming, where is your time? Where is your space? You may be, for all that I know, you may be in the moon. Not only when you are sleeping, even when I am giving a talk, For all that I know, you may be somewhere else. It is our mind, the constitution of the mind is time, space and causation. And what is that? It's not a concrete reality, but it is ideas in the mind. What is idea in the mind? It's knowledge. See? Knowledge. That is why we call it jnana and ajnana. Knowledge and ignorance. So knowledge means we go beyond the concept of time, space and causation. Ignorance means we fall within that influence and we suffer. In fact, what is happiness? It is knowledge. What is unhappiness? That is also knowledge. Right knowledge is happiness. Wrong knowledge is unhappiness. This is the simplest truth. So what is the lesson we can learn from this understanding? That if this is true, knowledge is right, happiness is right knowledge, and unhappiness is wrong knowledge, you don't need to do anything except in change your mind. Decide to be happy, you are happy. Decide to be unhappy, you are unhappy. On whom does it depend? So where is this happiness and unhappiness? Is it going to be parceled by the FedEx from somebody, somewhere else? You just change your mind and decide to be happy, you are happy. You decide to be unhappy, and who decides that? We decide. See, what is the journey we are talking about? Bring about a change in our knowledge. So bring about a change from the wrong knowledge to right knowledge. It is not time, it is not space, it is not causation. But though it is true, but still we have to take the help of these until we have mastered our own mind. That is why mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo. Mind alone is the cause of both bondage and also liberation. What a beautiful concept, prayana. We are talking about journey. So what is this journey? It is not in time, it is not in space, it is not in causation. It is a journey from a what is called limited knowledge. Ignorance means not non-knowledge. Wrong knowledge is not absence of knowledge. Wrong knowledge is limited knowledge. You get limited amount of information and you draw limited amount of conclusions, and that is lands us in trouble. Just as I told you, I tell the same thing again and again. One of my childhood friends, you know, he went with his father to see his future wife. So they were married. And afterwards he was not very happy. So I asked him, did you not see your wife? He said, I only saw a little bit of the back side. So what idea you will get a little bit of the back side? That's what in fact we all undergo experience. Do you ever see? It is only after marriage, one husband was telling, what a fool I had been to marry you. Your wife said, thank God, at last you realized what you are. It took quite some time. So, what is it? We are not dealing with unreal object. As we mentioned, there is no existence of unreal object. It is impossible. What then? What are we dealing with? Reality, but our understanding of that reality is severely limited. like four blind men touching an elephant. All of them were touching what? Elephant only. They are not touching something imaginary, animal. But what is their problem? Whatever they were touching, they were taking it, that partial limited knowledge, they are taking it as complete knowledge. So how does this analysis help us? Look at this person. What do we see? Is a human being, and is male or female, of such and such an age, of such and such a quality. What are we looking at? A little bit. The body, a little bit of the mind. Go beyond and see what is the real person. Who is the real person? And what is the... Yesterday we discussed. What was that? We never come see the reality. So yesterday what did we discuss? Self and non-self. What are we looking at? At the non-self. So what is non-self? That which I am, Gaya am. Whatever comes, that also goes. The body has come, then it will go. The here, sometimes we don't. The here comes, so here goes. Air comes, air goes. Whatever comes, it will go. If you are married, the marriage will definitely break down. Not necessarily in the form of divorce. With the death of one partner, the marriage is gone. It is a divorce. It is a permanent divorce. Anyway, so what are we talking about? Journey. What is the journey? We are all traveling towards the truth. However slow, some people faster, some people very fast. But even that also is a relative understanding, because if somebody is seen to be traveling very fast, oh, that person must have fallen from the sky. Has he fallen from the sky? No. He was traveling very slow in the past births. And he got lot of, you know, back, somebody in India that happens, you know, that red light, don't stop your car. Because if you stop from behind, they will come to you. So it is far better to hit somebody else than to be hit from behind. So Indians understand, if you are traveling very slow, then something will come and hit you at the back. After long time we learn our lesson and say, let us travel faster so that nobody can hit us from behind. That person is seen to be renouncing everything, traveling quite fast. In fact, all of us start traveling at the same speed. Our problem is, on the way we acquire lot of shopping objects. So the person who is burdened with lot of, you know, the car, backside, above, and the trailer, everything is there. But the person who wants to travel faster, what does he do? He will get rid of everything, see that how at maximum speed he can travel. That is when a person understands, if I want to travel faster, then I will have to get rid of all this junk. It is called beginning of renunciation. Simple fact, detachment, renunciation, monastic life is not a weird type of life, but the person is a bit wiser. But this wisdom doesn't come in one life, it comes through many, many lives. Even though it comes in many lives, relatively speaking, we can say many lives, absolutely speaking, the person hasn't moved from 1 centimeter, because time, space and causation exist only in the mind. So in the 8th chapter, there are two types of people. One, who wanted to attain liberation right now. The other, slowly, gradually. because the mind is not ready. So what does he do? He will do certain type of rituals. So if he can do the best of the ritual, so he will attain to the highest. So two points are made there. By performing rituals, one goes to heaven. Then what does they do? When the credit cards, credit gets exhausted, they will be kicked out of the Hawaiian island hotels. Then they will have to come and accumulate credit again. What is your rituals? Punya, accumulation of credit. Yeah, that's all. And once the credit limit is over, you will come back and again go. After some time, he becomes wiser. Then how can I attain more happiness? So that kind of happiness is called Brahma Loka Anubhuti. The highest, you know, we say Brahma Loka, Satya Loka. Hindu Vedanta philosophy designates there is within this realm of reality, there is a place which is called Brahma Loka. Why is it called Brahma Loka? Because there the baggage is very, very less. So what is it that limits our happiness? It's an important point for us to understand. Right here, how much happiness is there? Infinite amount of happiness is right here. Then why we are unable to experience it? Because it depends upon the instruments with which we are trying to access. Let me give an example. Suppose there is a huge bowl of water or cool drinks is there, whatever, is an example. And you have only a small spoon. And you want to drink. Each time you dip the spoon in that bowl, how much you can get? Only this much. If somebody is intelligent, he will take a huge mug. Then he will get that much. Do you see the point? So what is the instrumentation? This body, this mind is the instrument. See, another example. Here is a beautiful, you are walking in the garden. There is lots of flowers, imagine, lots of flowers in the We look at that same garden in one way. But supposing a great painter walks through that garden. Is he seeing some exotic, something else? He is seeing exactly the same scene, but he brought with him very refined instruments. So in his eyes, the beauty is increased 100-fold. And then imagine a poet like Wordsworth, daffodils, don't you see daffodils? In every spring season you go out, you will see. So there is daffodils everywhere. Do you burst into a song? You don't. Because you have taken very limited instrument and experiencing the same thing in a limited way. See, beautiful example. Once Sri Ramakrishna was traveling from Dakshineswar to Calcutta in a horse carriage. And suddenly he saw on the way a public woman, you know, public woman who entertained people. She was standing there. What does an ordinary man see in her? A public woman. If I pay some money, I can get a bit of pleasure from her. This is what a people's opinion. But what did Sri Ramakrishna see? Mother Sita is waiting for her husband. But if the object is exactly the same. But the vision is, what vision means, we call sometimes visions. What are those visions? Some exotic something, beings from the other planet come and they suddenly take off your specs and put on a different specs. What is it? Our mind is able to see. The purer it is, the more the divinity it is able to experience. Is it not? This is what we call purity. Divyam dadamite chakshu pashyame yogamaishwaram. I will give you divine eyes. What is divine eyes? He had made some cataract operation or what? He had removed the limitation. The limitation exists where? It is the same eyes. Wordsworth do not have a special type of physical eye. It is exactly the same eye. But he has a special way of looking at things. So, what is our journey? Our journey is how to make our mind less and less and less limited. When we perform certain rituals, then our mind removes the limitation to some extent. So that removal of the limitation doesn't depend on the ritual. It depends upon the person. No, the mind itself is the instrument. The person who is doing the ritual. So if a great man does the same puja, immediately he will see the Divine Mother. If ordinary people, they do the same ritual, then it gives very limited this thing. I will give you an illustration. You want to eat a banana. What do? You take it, you can eat it. It gives this much of happiness. But the same banana, you take to the Lord, put it in front of Him, bow down, and pray a little bit, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and accept it as prasada, sanctified food. See how much your happiness increases. If a great person like Sri Ramakrishna, if he does it, his mind becomes so pure, he doesn't see not even the prasada, he sees directly God Himself. See, when He was worshipping Mother, was he worshipping on an image? First, it is very interesting. First He started seeing only the feet of the Mother. Then suddenly He saw that the hands and feet were moving and she was smiling. And afterwards He started seeing Mother was moving about all. He sometimes heard the anklets. She was going up and down, dancing and going to the room like that. And one day a cat had come. What was he saying? The Divine Mother, you have come in the form of the cat. See what happened. How he was progressing. First, Mother's presence. Then there is no presence, Mother herself. Then no Mother. Anything that comes is Mother. Cat, dog, man. Everything has become Mother. Has anything changed outside? No. So, same ritual but gives different result. Same thing happens in every day of our life, same thing happens. You know, you eat the same food. Somebody derives much more happiness than others. You read the same book. It means something to one person. To another person it means tremendously something else. Is there any change in the book? Where is the change? In the perceiver. That is called journey. Journey is from limited knowledge to unlimited knowledge. So, Hindu philosophy posits two types of liberations. Gradual liberation called Krama Mukti and instantaneous liberation called Sadhyo Mukti or Jivan Mukti, we call it. So, in the 8th chapter, it's given from a lower state of happiness to a higher state of happiness. Heavenly world gives much higher happiness compared to worldly happiness. But the experience of Brahman gives far superior happiness compared even to heavens. But one merit is there, one difference is there. What is that? Once a person reaches Brahmaloka, it is likely the person will not come back. From there, he will go to the next stage. And then this is called gradual liberation, krama mukti. That point has been mentioned. But krama mukti is good. But if you can have mukti or liberation right now, it's better. That's what is going to be discussed in the 9th chapter. Okay. Let us read, those of us, or chant, those of us who would do that. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Tu Te Guhyatamam Pravakshyamyanasuyave Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yajnatva Mokshase Shubha Rajavidya Rajaguhyam Pavitramidamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartum Avyayam Ashraddhana Purusha Dharmasya Asya Parantapa Aprapyamam Nivartamte Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. Let us analyze these three first of all. The Lord is saying, what was he saying? To thee who dost not care, verily shall I now declare this, the most profound knowledge, united with realization, having known which thou shalt be free from evil. So what is it promising? I will give you that most wonderful of the secrets, by the knowledge of which you will become from evil. What is evil? Evil means suffering. You see, we say people, good people. Who are the good people? Those who contribute to our happiness are good people. Those who contribute to our suffering are evil people. Is that point clear? There is no such absolute division. This is good and this is evil. These are good people and these are evil people. See the point? How? Let me give you, supposing we label somebody as evil person, Bin Laden is an example. Suppose Bin Laden bombs the American bank and gathers a few billions of dollars and distributes it to all his family people. What do they call him? Next to God. He's a God. Is it not? What do we call that person? An evil person. See, what is the point? Good and evil are not absolutes. Good and evil are relational concepts with regard to our own self. If something is contributing to my happiness, I also tell you, know, who are, I also divide devotees into two categories. The biting devotees, the non-biting devotees. Yes, the biting devotees are those who criticize me, who don't bring me any rasagullas. The non-biting devotees are those, you know, whether they listen to my talk or not, the end result is very good. They bring me nice sweets and nice food and admire, oh, your talk was wonderful. What did you talk? What did you understand? Oh, you are talking about this and that. Understand, no understand, I don't mind. But I want to see the result. So I call those devotees, or good devotees, whether they understand or not. Supposing there are devotees who understand very well what I am talking about, imbued with tremendous amount of detachment, and don't bring me anything. What do you think my opinion about it? No, I won't ask you. Very interesting point. Whenever we categorize and say, this is good or this is evil, stop for a moment and say, why am I calling this as good or evil? So anyway, what is evil? Suffering. What is the Lord saying? I will free you from all evil. He is not saying from some evil. All evil. And what is the name for evil in Vedantic language? Samsaro. Samsara. Samsara means our life. This worldliness. Yeah. Worldliness is the evil. So when we are freed from worldliness, what happens to us? We become free. What is worldliness? Limitation. Sanskrit terminology is very useful in this respect. We call it prapancha. Prapancha means what? Pancha means what?
Five.
Prapancha means what? That which is experienced through the five sense organs is called prapancha. It is a limitation. Your eyes are limited. Your ears are limited. So we are trying to extend this through in the form of telephone, television. Television what? Extension of the eye. What is microscope? Extension of the eye. What is telescope? Extension of the eye. Telescope is a wonderful example. When we are looking at ourselves, we look through the small eyeglass and the other side, we are there. When we are looking at others, we reverse the telescope and then that's it. That is called selfishness. Anyway, the point is Jagat is another name. Jagat means, Gati means movement. Jagat means that which is constantly moving. Another name is Samsara. Samsara means what? Sarati iti Saraha. Always moving. Flux. That is what Buddha used to say. Flux. So anything that is moving, changing, or looked at through limited instrumentality. After all, we get our knowledge is dependent upon the instrument. And we are using these five sense organs as instruments. They are very, first of all, limited instruments. Then they are defective instruments. We add lot of filters there. I am an Indian, I am a Hindu, and I am a Swami, I am this, I am that. All these are filters. See how much evil in this world we are creating. I am a Christian, I am an American, first of all. I am superior to all countries. And among the Americans, I am the what is called Iowa person. All the states in America, Iowa state is best. Of all the cities in Iowa, Cedar Rapids is the very best. So much limited we are. I am a Christian. So anybody who is not a Christian is not very welcome. Among Christians, varieties are there. So if they are Protestants, Methodists, Seventh-day Adventists and all these, eliminated. And among all those who are remaining, only those few who agree with me are the best Christians. How many filters we have? This is how we are judging. That is why this whole experience of the world is called evil. Why is it called evil? Even when we are looking at something as good, and whatever is not, whatever doesn't fall within that limit is what? It's opposite. Is it not? So what is this? Beyond, go beyond evil. What is it? You get such knowledge, you go beyond all evil. What does it mean? You remove the whole instruments. What are, how many instruments are there? There are only two. What are those? Body and mind, that's all. So you go beyond body mind. When you go beyond body mind, who is an Indian? Who is a Hindu? and who is good, who is evil, because how do you distinguish? You are the only one. What a beautiful way of telling. World means nothing wrong with it. Limitation. So nobody wants to be limited. Bondage means limitation. That's all. Nothing else. So the Lord says, this knowledge which I am going to impart to you, it is the highest science. What a beautiful word. Highest science. What is the goal of science? To give us knowledge of what we are, what the world is, what nature is, so that this knowledge would eliminate unforeseen obstacles. If I know that there is the GPS, if I know there is more traffic, then I can take perhaps an alternative route. If I know that there is a danger there, I can avoid that. This is what science is trying to do. It is trying to expand our knowledge. Is there any limit? There is no limit for the obstacles, because it is ananta, infinite. If you remove this problem, Swami Vivekananda used to say, you know, it is like rheumatism, romantic pain. You try to remove the romantic pain from this spot, it will go to the other spot. Remove it from the knees, it will go to the back. Remove it from the back, it will go to the shoulder. Remove it from the shoulder, it will go back to the knee. Yeah, that is why it is called knees problem. Replacement is one. Knees replacement. So, I will give you, what is that highest science? Vidya means science. What is the highest science? That which removes the evil totally. That is the king of the science. That is the best science. After that, there would be no more need of any knowledge. But unfortunately, it is also the greatest secret. It is called sacred. It is also secret. Why is it called secret? Not because anybody wants to copyright it. Because the person to whom it needs to be given must also be in a position to understand it. You can tell. This is Einstein's famous formula of the general relativity. You can tell to anybody. Even a child can write it out. But how many people can really understand the implication of that? Not even we. It is incredible. An old man goes on a travel in a satellite at lightning speed, comes back 10 years younger than his son. Can you believe it? And this relative world? A person who stays in the 7th story ages a few seconds less than a person who is living on the ground floor. Can you believe it? But that is the fact. That is the fact. Maybe you don't notice the difference because it is only few seconds. But few seconds, definitely life becomes extended to the person who is upstairs. I am not going into that, all those details. I am just trying to tell you that incredible things will happen which are difficult for us to cognize, to understand, to accept. Maybe we understand, but we can't accept many things. Many things we understand, we don't accept. Death we understand, we don't accept it. Separation we understand, we don't accept it. So many things we don't accept. So this is a science, this is the highest science, but it is, unfortunately, it remains a secret. Secret, as I said, not because somebody wants to keep it a secret, because it is no secret. It's all here. It's all here. But how many people can really, we are all studying. How many of us understand? Because this is not intellectual understanding. This is intuitive grasp. For that we have to practice spiritual disciplines. Anyway, so he is telling, What is the question may come, what is the good of this knowledge? What does it do? So the good is here. What is that? It purifies us. And it is realizable by direct perception. It is endowed with immense merit, very easy to perform, and of an imperishable nature. What is the result you get? The imperishable, every other science, whatever results we get, that is perishable. Suppose you go to moon, is it a perishable or imperishable? It is perishable. You know, you have some new recipe. Is it perishable or imperishable? Because anything that operates in time is perishable. We are all perishable objects. Unable to understand, we try to extend. You know, what is this extend? Through cosmetic surgery. But what is it? We all come with them. When you go to supermarket, you want to buy some food, it all comes with an expiry date. We all come with an expiry date. And we want to extend that expiry date. Not by changing the content within the box, but by erasing the expiry date. And put to extend, you know, by years. You see, 0, 0, 9. So that 0, 9 we remove and put say 1, 5 or 2, 5. Will it work? Because the content is perishable. Time is that which brings about the perishing. What a marvelous truth. Such a beautiful, sweet, desirable food. Keep it for a few days longer, what does it become? It positively becomes poisonous. What am I talking about? That is why it is said, 3 days a guest. After 3 days is a pest. You didn't get it? 3 days. No, all right, they extend it to a week. One week, guest. After 1 week, pest. Do we understand that? This is the truth. I'm not joking. So here you try this with somebody else. You know, you go and live with somebody as a guest. How long will they put up with you? They will ask, one Swamiji went to some house, not showing any signs of leaving. So one day the devotee sat at his feet, pressing his feet, "Swamiji, when are you again going to come to my house?" You see, that is the nature of this world. It is a profound truth we have to understand, because we are in search of an imperishable happiness. But there is no such object which will yield imperishable happiness, because anything that is manufactured in time also has to be dead, uncreated in time. Don't we understand that? Whether it is food or our body or as a dress or anything that comes out of time also has to go out of time. But there is one which is imperishable. So what is the logic? If time manufactures something, if it becomes perishable, what can become imperishable? That which is beyond time. And what is that which is beyond time? Only the self. That is what actually is trying to tell us. So persons without Shraddha for this Dharma, Return, O scorcher of foes, without attaining me to the path of rebirth, fraught with death. So, two important points. Those who do not attain me, they will be returning to some sorrow. What does it mean? Whatever is other than me or other than the self is non-self. Whatever is non-self is bound by, limited by time, space and causation. So this is the reason why we should not be too much attached to the body. What does it mean? Does it mean that you will have to undergo serious troubles and all those things, difficulties? No. What it means is that accept the truth. Detachment is means what? Accept the truth. What is the truth? If a guest comes to you, what is the truth? You get very attached with the guest. And every one of us are guests. Is it not a fact? See, husband and wife, they don't know each other before marriage. So one is the guest of the other. Our children will come. They are guests. They also come with a expiry date. We do not seem to accept that. We think we are permanent and our people are also permanent. Everything in this world is, how foolish it is to have to say that which operates within time is permanent. How can it be? It is not possible. But that's not the only problem. We do know things can happen. But what we want to say, the greatest ignorance is that we imagine and demand that everything should happen in a rational way, reasonable way. What is the reasonable way? If some child is born, he should live until 100 years old. We also live 100 years old. Unfortunately, in this world, things we understand, everybody has to die. But what we don't understand, why should they die at any time? And we also understand they should die in a particular way. So at the age of 99 years and 364th day at night, he will have first class, you know, supper, dinner, whatever you call, goes to bed and would not get up. That is excellent way of accepting death. But anything other than that, no. Even one day before, 364th day, suppose God says, can I take this person 306? No. Yeah. One fellow was dying. Doctor told him that you have only few moments left. Do you have any last wish? He was unable to speak. Gathered all the strength and said, Doctor, if you don't mind, I want a second opinion. This is our condition. So what is it we are talking about? We don't accept, even when we understand, sometimes we are not aware of the truth. And even when we are aware of the truth, we don't seem to accept it. Even when we accept it, we put conditions in which way this expiry should take place. But that doesn't happen in this world. Accidents, murders, killing, any time, any place, in any way, things will happen. If we can accept that, that is called detachment. Not understanding, intellectual. We should accept. If we accept it, we don't behave surprised. You follow the point? You know, suppose I am telling you, I will come to your house 1 week before. And the day I come also, I phone and say, I am starting. And before reaching your house 5 minutes before, I am almost at the doorstep. In another 5 minutes, I will be at your home. When I knock at your door, will you be surprised to see me? If we can accept the nature of this world in that way, then death will not surprise us, change of circumstances will not surprise us, anything can happen. I am not only talking about death, I am talking about time. Time can do anything. What is the main work of time? To separate, to bring about union, and to break that union. Time brings two things together, and time again breaks that union. So this is constantly, it is bringing together, it is separating. It is bringing together, it is separating. Which is what is, you know, two people, they don't know each other, they come together. After some time they go. Anything, it could be children, it could be objects, it could be disease, suddenly some disease will come. And is there any guarantee disease will come only at the ripe old age of after 80? In fact, nowadays it is the other way around. Geriatric problem is the biggest problem. All the health money is being poured. And so an American had written a book, it is the moral right of every person after 60 to kick their own buckets. Yes, we demand. Nowadays people are living longer and longer and longer. This is what is happening. So what is the selling? There is only one being who is free from the trammels of time, space and causation. Who is that? That is the self. Anything other than self is called non-self. And anything that is non-self is bound by time, space and causation. What is he telling here? So without attaining me, then what these people return to the path of rebirth fraught with death. Even when, again, you know, words confuse us sometimes. Fraught with death. We don't want to use the word death. But the fact is, when we go to sleep, what is that state? A kind of death. You go to sleep, are you aware who is around you? It's as though you have gone to the other world. Is there any guarantee you are coming back? No. The interesting point, we want to go deep into it, because we measure time from the waking standpoint. That's a great mistake. When you go into the state of deep sleep, which is called sushupti, the time measurement, there is no time there. So if there is no time, what is that state? A timeless state. It's a timeless state. So how long were you in deep sleep? For eternity. For eternity. Are you with me? But when you come back from that state, you are measuring that eternity from your waking standpoint of time. So you see, even in dreams, time also is different. How much time does it take to go to Delhi in your dream? Just like that. Your thought comes, you are in Delhi. Thought comes again, you are here or somewhere elsewhere. Things will change. You can go back and forth. Have you not dreamt? You are a small girl taking a bag. You are hurrying because the school bell had already rung. Have you not dreamt? Yeah. I dreamt quite a few number of times. Yeah, but the only thing is, my dress is this. Even in the dream also, this is the dress I was putting on. So because we are associates, strong associations are there, you see. So this, you can go back and forth. You can also see future events. I told you, I had seen future events, which would happen. And I did not know whether it would happen or not. I thought it was a dream. When they happened, then I knew, this is what I had foreseen in my dream. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so a non-self means that which is limited by time, space and causation. So if there is birth, that is what is called. Again, I am emphasizing, don't think it's a waste of time. What is birth? Cause manifesting as effect. What is death? Effect going back to the state of the cause. It is simple. Why are we so much frightened? Frightened because we think, oh, all these people whom we are familiar with, we have to leave. But in any case, whether you like it or not, you have to leave. It is only a question of matter of time. Every day are you not leaving? Every day you are leaving on this whole known world to you for eternity, not for 4 hours, for eternity. As I told you, when you are in the Sushupti, it is eternity. And when you come back, oh, I was only for 2-3 hours only. In 2-3 hours anything could happen to your so-called things. 1 second, things can change. That happened, you know. I'm giving one simple example. In Bangalore, there was a devotee. She was sleeping with her husband. When she woke up, he was dead. Some brain fever or something like that. She couldn't believe, because they had nice talk. Then both, no sign of previous illness. Both of them had nice talk. They went to sleep. And when she woke up, he was absolutely still. Then she thought he was sleeping, then there is something very strange going on. There is no sound at all. Probably he was a sound sleeper. We don't know. Know what sound sleep? Sleep for the person, sound for the others. Yeah. When you see somebody sound sleeper, suddenly no sound, you get worried. What had happened? It's not normal. It's abnormal. So she screamed and called the doctor who was neighbor, and he came and he declared he was dead. You know, how foolish we are to put and say, I expect things will happen in this particular way. Not necessary. So anything that is within the realm of time-space causation, that is called birth and death. Every second millions of universes are being born. What is our foolish understanding of life? Look at the astronomer's point of view. You are all a bit familiar. How many stars are coming into existence every second, and how many stars are exploding every second, and there are stars who have become extinct billions of light years away, and their light is reaching us only now, and we are seeing that star in all its glory. Do you understand that? You are looking at a supposedly dead star. Because even if a star has taken birth there, say a billion years ago, and imagine, after another billion of years it is dead, and that when it took birth, it took billion light years for that light to reach us. For us, we are witnessing the present state of the time when the star is being born, and we will go on seeing it for another billion years until the light stops reaching our eyes. What a marvelous thing. Pratipode, every shaking step destroys a world for air. Oh mother, from dancing. Kali the mother. This is the truth. And we are so, every day, how many people are dying? 100 and more or less, 175,000 people. And many more babies are being born. Who do you know? Because all the mosquitoes are being killed. Where will they go? Hindu's concept of rebirth. That's why I said, you know, biting devotee, non-biting. That's my peculiar theory. Master Ramakrishna used to go out for answering calls of nature. So was he having these attached bathrooms with air conditioned and all that? So what do you think all the mosquitoes are doing? This is the right opportunity. And all those are reborn now because of the punya of Sri Ramakrishna and become what? Biting devotee. Anyway, it's a marvelous thing to have a bit of knowledge of astronomy. What is the benefit? When we place our small life against the background of this vast cosmos, then our mind becomes a little more expanding. So that is very wonderful. I find it two things very, very beneficial. One, I would say three things. One, a bit of study knowledge of astronomy. Even you look at some of the photographs now freely available on the internet. This NASA and others are taking. Second, the documentaries on the wild life. How the same consciousness, Yadevi Sarvabhuteshu Chetanet Yabhidhiyate Namastasyai 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 Namo Namaha. The Divine Mother in the form of consciousness is manifesting in every living creature. Even this tiniest insect, what intelligence! It is struggling. Where can I get food? How can I protect my offspring? Do you see how much it is no less astonishing and no less service than what a human, loving human mother does to her babies? This is what every animal, every insect is doing. See, crocodile, how it protects its young ones. You are hanging like your, noodles. A bit of the, with one bite, it can tear, a wild buffalo or whatever. And here, this tiniest of the baby hanging, all of them jump into her mouth, say a fort, like a fortress. And when the danger passes, immediately you all come and joyfully swim and all that. When you look at the mother, how she is protecting, if your mind doesn't expand, I don't know what else be able to do. You showed us one, that lion eating one, trying to eat one calf. Bull calf, you remember? And how all the ones came, gold and buffaloes, wild buffaloes. So that is the second thing. Third thing, the psychological studies that are going on nowadays are revealing astonishing facts about how much we are influenced by even the tiniest indirect suggestions. What marvelous things the research. Just to give an example, there is one person, he became a bestseller, Malcolm, The Tipping Point, etc. Their books are there. There he mentions this. You don't need to know about it. Somebody was called for an interview. And he is indirectly, they talked about racism. And the persons were blacks. So they indirectly. And then they were asked to take the tests. And those who heard this talk before they took examination, and those who didn't hear any of this talk, it made an enormous measurable difference in their test results. These people never talked directly, all indirectly. But that roused unconsciously their own, how they were looked by other people, and that depressed their mind, and the test results were not very flattering for them. Measurable differences have come. If this is true, Then every second what we are watching in the television, how our others are looking at us, and how others are talking to us, and the advertisements that are going on everywhere, how much can they influence? But just to give you one example, most of us, we look upon Bin Laden as what? Tell me. How do we react to, you see any Muslim with a cap? Who do you react? You may not say politically, it's not correct to say you may be a terrorist, but with what eyes do you look? And yet, 99.999% of them, they are absolutely innocent like you and me. But our perception, I'm talking, how much we are influenced. Horrible this one. Anyway, psychology is also unraveling the fact. How intelligent even a baby is. How much the baby is influenced by the environment in which it is trying to grow. How the parents' parental attitude, parental view of life, and their behavior, whether they are happy families or unhappy families, how they are influencing the baby to some extent. The Hindus don't believe 100%, because we are all born with our own what we call past impressions. So under the same circumstances, one baby may turn out to be a saint, another baby may turn out to be a rogue. This is the simple truth. But definitely that influence is there. See, we are all gathered here. What are we doing? Talking about Gita. We are not always talking about the highest truths. We are also talking about a bit of psychology, a bit story, a bit joke, etc., etc. But unconsciously, something is going inside, whether you will it or not. And you think, alright, I don't bother much about it. You think, but it won't go away from your mind. It will be there, and at the right time, it will pop up, and it will influence you for good or bad. It will help you. Definitely this kind of things will help you. So what is the Lord saying here? That those without faith, Shraddha means what? Believing something is absolutely true. Is an interesting point. Though it is taking time, I want to make it. Recently, they interviewed me. A man was taking a film in the BBC. It's all about what do you say to the question, do you believe in God? Can you prove God? What's your opinion about God? All about God. As a Hindu, what would be your answer? So he said, there are 3 points, first of all. First point is, God can never be proved or disproved, because he is not a provable object, he is not an object. How will you prove an object? You are the God. God is not an object. You can say, I want to prove whether this exists or doesn't exist. Second point is, see, he is existing, but it would be a mistake to think that you apply one standard of measurement for everything. For example, how do you measure the 9th symphony of Beethoven? Do you bring an electronic balance? And how do you understand, judge the worth of the 9th or any piece of music? How do you judge? You must have a special laboratory which is called musical sense, aesthetic sense. If one lacks aesthetic sense, that person will never be able to judge it. And even if a person has aesthetic sense, that aesthetic sense must not be conditioned by a particular type of music. This is the point. If I am an Indian, if I am habituated only to Indian music, have I any right to prove the what is called excellence or otherwise of Beethoven's 9th symphony? I have no right. See how much our habits influences. That is the second point. Music, yes, is it an excellent piece of music. It can be proved that it is an excellent piece of music, but not your scientist's laboratory. It is the laboratory of a musician who has an excellent sense of music and habituated to that particular type of music, right? So God, if somebody says, God, I have seen God, you can't drag him into the measure the brain waves and say whether he experienced God or not. That is a stupid way of doing. Then what is the measurement? There must be a spiritual sense. Only those who have spiritual sense, in that laboratory, they can prove, yes, this is absolutely true, because only a spiritual laboratory can prove God exists or not. Right? Yes. What is the point there? The point is that if it is a musical laboratory, you don't need to prove, because the musical laboratory takes it for granted. Music exists. You see, an ordinary scientist's laboratory takes it for granted an object exists. Otherwise the laboratory would never have come. For a non-existing thing, an existing laboratory will not come. So there is no need for a spiritual laboratory. It is taken for granted that is there. But the final point, what does it really matter? Whether God exists or doesn't exist. If a person believes enough, is it not good enough? If you think there is a ghost here, whether ghost exists or not, it doesn't matter. But the effects of your belief are very real upon you. It produces fear, it produces palpitation, all those symptoms are there. It's a wonderful point. What does it matter whether your husband loves you or not? If you believe he loves you, that's fine. Really, I am not joking. So long as you believe that yes, that is a fact, that's absolutely fine. So this is a crucial point. Vedanta looks at it in this way. Why? Because who is it that is having, you can doubt any object, but you cannot doubt the doubter. You are the doubter. If you are convinced God exists, who is that God? Where is that God? You are the God. You are, where are you? You are right where? God. What a wonderful thing. That is called faith. What is doubt? Doubt means sometimes you believe, sometimes don't. If you believe, it affects you one way. If you don't believe, it affects you in the opposite way. So here he is talking about what? Shraddha. What is Shraddha? Unwavering belief. So long as that unwavering belief is there, then things work out exactly in the same way. How does it work? Just to make this point clear. Supposing you are dreaming. In the dream, a tiger is running after you. Would you run away, try to run away from it or not? Is it real or not for you? So long as you are dreaming, it is real. So what is faith? It is exactly the same phenomena. Your mind, it thinks that there is something. And immediately it affects you. We are all doing the same thing 24 hours a day from birth. We say, this is my mother. Who do you know? How are you? Are you sure this is your mother? Maybe there is a mistake in the hospital. Some babies, and yes, it happened. Some babies, they discovered. The baby was, nurses. They put numbers. Number tag is misplaced. Then this baby went to the other mother, and this baby went to so the other. For the baby, it doesn't make any difference, because but the mothers are looking after the babies exactly Later on, actually this happened to him. Two babies were born, and one of them has been taken away. Later on, they met after several years. In fact, there are cases of a brother and sister marrying, falling in love, marrying, having children, then discovering to their horror that they were actually blood brother and sister. Then of course they separated. The point is that if we believe enough that this is my father, this is my mother, and this is this, what is our religion? If you are brought up in a Hindu household, what would you be? You would be behaving like a Hindu. If I am brought up in a Christian household from baby, then I would behave what? A Christian. See, we take as though things are absolutes. And I am only reacting according to, no, it is our mental ideas, conceptions. Then God is a mental conception. Ghost is a mental conception. Right? Right? And you are a mental conception to me. I don't know what you are. What I think you are, that's what, how determines my reaction towards you. Is it not the truth? Are we really seeing each other? I'm not talking about philosophy, I'm talking about psychology. Only the camera lens is taking me photographs inside, and I have some filters to judge you, and accordingly I am judging you. Is it not? Mary's story. It was an elderly couple, 60 years married, both old, sitting in a drawing room, and the man was reading newspaper, the woman was sewing. So he shouted, "Mary, I love you." Mary was deaf. So he went near. She said, "What?" He went near. "Mary, I love you." Shouted louder. He said, "What?" He went very near. "Mary, I love you." She said, "That's not right. I also don't love you." It's okay. We are square. So you see, what is the point we are talking about? The self we are talking about is where? The absence. Similarly, the non-self we are talking about also is where? There is no non-self at all. You don't think world is different and the self is different. The Lord is going to show, turn to the right, you will go to the self. Turn to the left, you will go to the other place. There is no other place. All that exists is self. At the first point. But at the second point, at the same time, you cannot see both self and non-self. If you are seeing the self, you don't see the non-self. If you are seeing the non-self, you don't see the self. So what is the Lord telling? Now you are perceiving everything as non-self. But I will teach you in that way. By which you will see only the, perceive only the self. And once you perceive the self, then what happens to the non-self? That perception disappears. Once that perception disappears, then you would not be bound by time, space and causation. If you are not bound by time, space and conception, you will forever be in the state of bliss. What a wonderful teaching it is. So he is expanding these things, how beautiful. So what is the, for tomorrow's talk, this is the point you have to remember. What is the point? There is only one reality. And that reality either appears as the self or as the non-self, as one or as multiplicity. To see multiplicity is to be bound. To see the one is to be unbound. So how both the self is the not, is alone the non-self also, appearing through the filters of time, space, causation, as multiple, as non-self, etc. And if we can understand it, it is our perception which makes the self as non-self. There is really, there is no non-self. Like me, in dream there is no world, no India, no America. You create it. How many of you are there? Yes, could be more. One fellow was having trouble, double vision. He went to an ophthalmologist. So the ophthalmologist asked him, "What is the problem? Why did you come?" He said, "Doctor, I see double vision." Doctor said, "What? All three of you?" We have all suffered from this eye problem. We all suffer from eye problem. So you go to an ophthalmologist. What does he prescribe? Eye drops. Alright, we will discuss about it tomorrow. Did I tell you then, Joseph, that I drop? Yesterday I didn't tell. There was one Swami, he passed away recently. Wonderful Swami, he is a very highly evolved Swami. So, he was also very humorous. So, this is one of his shows. If you have eye problem, you go to an eye specialist. So what does the eye specialist prescribe to you? Eye drops. Sri Ramakrishna is the greatest eye specialist. You know who is a specialist? You know who is a specialist? A specialist is one who knows more about less. A super specialist is one who knows everything about nothing. So Sri Ramakrishna is a super eye specialist. So if you go to Sri Ramakrishna, he will also prescribe same things, slightly reverse, drop eyes. That was his way of putting it humorously. Eye drop means what? Yeah, then there is no problem at all.